Welcome to the wide world of punting, where we talk about anything and everything in the world of punting. I'm Jacob Wynn. This is episode 13. You know what they say, lucky for some. And I've got an episode here I hope you're going to enjoy. We're going to have the second half of Ask Tristan Everything, where Tristan answers all the questions that you guys submitted in the tripod group, including how odds move. I've got Neddy from Neddy Given Sunday talking about his origins, how he got his unlikely path to be sharing NFL tips, and he's had another really successful season. And Matt O'Keefe, another guy who's in the group, who's put in a lot of work, shared a lot of bangers, including a really juicy 26-1 that got up a couple of weeks ago, which we talk about that, of course, as well as his process. I've got a bonus cameo pick, 60 seconds from Kobe Brown, someone who shares a lot of great MMA tips in the group. UFC 257 coming up this weekend from Abu Dhabi. And then I'm going to close with the Wide World Bet of the Week. No hiding from a 6-week slide on that one, and we lost in pretty crazy fashion yesterday. I'll talk about that as well as try and find a winner for you. That will also be on the NFL that's upcoming with two huge games this weekend that decides who plays in the Super Bowl. But let's begin with the chat with Tristan. We've talked about price changes. This is a question from Aaron Donnelly. Is it all manual or is it automatically? And you've spoken about it's a combination. And he's asked, is it adjusted based on weight of bets? And of course, that would be part of the reason that odds would move.
Yeah, there's a whole variety of reasons for why market shift. It can be purely information's come to light. It can be sharp action. It can be weight of money. Yeah, but we don't purely change all of our markets simply because of weight of money. You know, we'll take an opinion, and we might be of that opinion where we're comfortable opposing money coming our way. So yeah, it's difficult to give a black and white answer because there's just so many different variables that come into how you shape your market. But it changes every event you bet on. It changes in a whole heap of different ways, and that's where it comes down to our traders' discretion on when they wish to move a market. Is it because of weight of money? Is it because a player's pulled out? Is it because there's weather coming? Is it because someone's who's sharps had a bet, or one of these tipping sets have had a bet, and the market's going to move? So there's a whole variety of things that do that. And then there can be on those smaller events when there is an automatic sort of element to it if the market's just shifting as well. So there's just so many ways to address it. And that's what makes our time in the office so exciting, because there's no one game that's the same. You've got to understand the market. You've got to understand all these variables that go into it. And at time, you've just got to sit there and you've got to hold your nerve and say, well, I'm going to back myself to be right here. And then the proof's in the pudding a few hours later.
I find that really interesting because, weight of bets can be so many different things. So I imagine if you're getting a weight of money on some market and you don't understand why, that's going to cause a lot of concern in the office. And what have we got this price right? Whereas if it's a more of a high profile match that you feel you've got a really good understanding of, you probably know, oh, we're getting a lot of money on this team because they're really popular and because people love them. But we think that they're overrated and we're willing to kind of take that money and not adjust our odds because we think we've got the odds right, as opposed to a match where you might be scrambling to think, what have we missed here?
Yeah, exactly. And I think we touched on a few weeks ago using a Sean Johnson example where, if early in the day the news is that it's likely to be out, and we sort of shift the odds according to that information, and then when teams are officially unveiled and he's officially out, and you see people running around trying to bet against the Sharks in that sort of scenario. But if we're comfortable, we've already priced that move in, then we'll obviously hold our nerve.
We'll go through a little bit quicker on some of these. What about what are your main sports or events that take the most money in the year?
Yeah, so probably our biggest sport would be rugby league, AFL as well. They're probably the two key ones. In the American side of things, NFL's very, very popular, but NBA is too, and there's just so many more games in the NBA. So it's a difficult one. It depends on, you're looking at average hold per game or over the course of the season. Tennis, we wouldn't hold as much on a game as either of those two, but there's so many events. So it's a difficult one to answer, but your rugby league, AFL are our two key ones. And then, from the American side of things, it'd be NBA and NFL. And I think that's pretty standard across the board.
And you've said before you're about 50-50 split between racing and sports. And obviously most people know when the big race carnivals are, I'm sure you take your bigger percentage of race bets as well. Ask a question from Leon about, do you green up your books versus taking different positions? And I know that we've discussed this before, and you've kind of already talked about this in some of the answers, that you certainly are not just trying to balance the action on both sides. You're much more interested in getting the odds in a position where you feel is correct, And even if it means you're lopsided and you'll take your lumps on some games, you think you'll do better long-term having more correct odds than trying to balance action for a small cut.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're definitely, it'd be very, very rare for us to have a green book in a game. Nearly every market that goes around, we have got some opinion. Some of it is just letting the market determine where the money goes. Other times we'll be actively trying to lay an option. And so again, yeah, there's different ways to do it, but yeah, we certainly don't green books up very
Question
regularly
from
at all.
Saul, Better Call Saul, is reading line movement to make plays a sustainable method to profit? People ask often, if you see a weight of money come and you see, let's talk in a sports context, you see an NBA line move, would you always be better off jumping on the side that the money has come for, that has had the sharp line move? And I would warn that it's not value for you if you're not getting on the same price or line that the sharps got on when they moved it. Is that how you interpret that question about line movement and being able to sustain profit?
Yeah, so you can't just back something blindly on the back of money moving, you know, like you, and it's very important you don't take lower odds if you're not sure why the line's moving. Now, it's important, in my opinion, to know what you want to back or you know, price something up yourself and say, look, I'm erring towards team A here. I'm not ready to pull a trigger yet. But if you see the market start to move, you're like, well, maybe I've got to jump on now if the market is moving. But then on the flip side, if you're wanting to be on team B and then the market's starting to move very hard against team A, you wanted to sit back and you let the movement happen. You try to investigate why it's happened. Is it just purely weight of money? Is there a player information? Is there some external element? And once you get to the bottom of all of that, and obviously not going to know every single time what all the total reasons of any movements are, if it doesn't change your perception, then you're going to get better odds about your original selection. So that is a key one.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely market moves should inform your bet, but I don't know of a system of playing it like the market as if it's stocks or something. That's foolproof. That is purely profitable on nothing else but trying to piggyback line moves. In the scenario, this is from Matthäus, in the scenario where general consensus market differs to a line set by your traders. So you talk about your confidence in your rugby league traders, but let's say if the market is a few points off, I think we touched on this in an earlier episode, how do you approach this? It's fair to say you're not going to go all the way to sit at the number you think it should be at and create too big of an opportunity, but you'll definitely shade your number in the direction you believe it should be.
Yeah, definitely. Like if there's a game that the marketplace has got six flat and we might have it rated at two or whatever the case might be, is we're certainly not going to go up at two or three or four, but we are going to obviously pick a spot where we feel we're protecting the side that we want to be with. If the market then moves the way we have priced it, then obviously we'll try to stay in front of the market. So yeah, you have to respect the market. You've got to obviously trust the process that we have in place ourselves, but it's just trying to balance the two so you don't put yourself in a position where you're significantly different for the market, because you're not going to be right every time when you take an opinion. And the thing is, if you put yourself out there too far, it's funny how often those are the ones when you get wrong.
A topic you've talked about earlier, and I think you even mentioned it on this pod, like wanting to be fair, but you also want the punters to do the right thing back. And the question from Aaron was, what's an example of people doing the wrong things? And I think we've touched on this as well, as like, I guess people you like trying to exploit like terms and conditions, or not betting genuinely, trying to bet on things where they know the odds of, say, it's just blatantly a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. And I know a lot of people sitting out there listening and be like, well, why do we have to look after the bookies? Well, you know, it's their error, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, and that's one way to look at it. Like, I guess my message is pointing it to people that want to be successful long term on the punt. And I know a lot of your listeners are in that boat. They want to try to be as successful as they can. And it's just your reputation can get tarnished significantly if you do the wrong thing. And a couple of those items of doing the wrong thing is, we had an example about half an hour ago, actually, where the feed that closes our races wasn't working. And I was over in America and, you know, Chile and these sort of places, and the race was still up after the race had finished. Now, in our rules, if the race is finished, the bets can't stand, but people are on there backing the first four in the exact order and these sort of things. And they're the things that are doing the wrong thing. Like, it reflects poorly on the account. And what it just means is that if we have to make a decision based on, you know, where it's a 50-50, do we bet this person at X amount or Y amount, if someone's done something that we consider, you know, underhanded or not operating in a genuine way, then obviously we're going to be more likely to err on the cautious side. So we've, as I said at the outset, like, we've got a lot of our pro punters that we have really good relationships with that win off us lifetime. You know, they've won millions off us over the course of years, and they'll be the first ones to put up the hand, oh, you know, your race is open, or you've got a market flip, because they know that, yeah, they could probably try to exploit it and make a small little earn on that. In all likelihood, the bet probably won't go through anyway. But if they ring us up and tell us and fix the problem or alert us to the problem, it's a good sort of way to earn that respect, which develops a relationship over a long period of time. And I know there's, you know, like, the perception out there is the bookie's the enemy or whatever, and of course you're going to want to try to beat us, and we need to try to be profitable. But at the end of the day, it's a relationship of trying to make sure that, as I said, the winning punters can still win off us. We can still value their business, but you can do it in the right way.
And I'm not saying you would do this, but I warn people, if they find a blatant mistake, because I don't know how every bookie operates, and they bet it, well, it still might not win. It might lose. And you don't always know if the bookie's going to void it afterwards if it loses. But if it wins, it probably will get voided. So you actually think you're in a position where you've got a great bet, but you might actually be in a no-win situation where it may actually stand, or it may be voided if it wins. So just take caution, I guess, when finding, like, big errors as well. Another question about, you spoke about that you do track ROI of customers. Do you track closing EV? So do you track customers that are consistently beating the market, beating the odds in racing, or beating the line in sports?
Yeah, we certainly look at that, and that comes into the overall ROI. Like, if people are bet with us over an extended period, that works hand in hand. If you're beating the closing line or beating the starting price, then you will be profitable, you know, providing you have enough bets. I know variance over a short window can change that, but yeah, we certainly look at that, particularly on new accounts. If we see, you know, someone's having a bet early, we'll always treat that more cautiously than if someone's coming in the last 5 or 10 minutes, because they're obviously betting early for a reason. If we then see the horse or the footy team shortening, then we will, you know, be aware of that. And it, regardless of that single bet wins or loses, because of that variance I spoke about, you know, we will be mindful and we will sort of monitor that so that we can utilise that information, as I sort of said, for how we address that bets from that source going forward.
A question from Tommy about, what's your profitability? I know he loves his NBA player props. Do you have profitability on that? And I just, on a broader sense, you already talked about WA racing, so maybe that ties in. Like, do you have any, I guess, loss leaders where you have products that you're actually not profitable on, but you still want to book them because you want to offer, you know, as vast array of markets as you can for all your players?
Yeah, oh, there's plenty of them. Like, our I think all bookmakers struggle to win on the player props, unless, like, it's probably changing for a few of the other operators, and we're hoping to bring in the same game multi shortly, where maybe a bit more of that recreational money does come into play. But those sort of markets, you know, they probably haven't been invested in terms of the bookmakers really ultra analysing them, and there is obviously some variables there that can change it. So things like player bets, it is difficult for us to win, particularly with our client base. We have got a very sharp client base. There's many things that we operate on that, you know, we lose that over an extended period of time. Are they loss leaders? I don't know. It's just a case of us trying to obviously grow our client base, obviously try to make those prices sharper. So it's something we're constantly working on. We continue to identify things that we need to improve as a business and things that we need to work on to enhance things. But yeah, our motto is we want to offer as many markets as we physically can. And, you know, we're aware that as we're bringing things out initially, it's not going to be immediately fruitful unless we put the work in, and we need to sort of identify the sharp players and what we're doing to hopefully sharpen up our overall pricing scheme as we go forward.
But thanks again for all your time, because this is a really good one. Thank you to everyone who presented their questions. I think we dived in pretty deep to a bunch of them to address them. So this is a great episode. Cheers very much, Tristan.
Thanks for that. Thanks for the questions too.
Thanks again to everybody who sent in those great questions for Tristan. I hope that gave you even greater understanding of some of the mechanics of how bookies work, and especially how their odds move. And if you enjoyed that chat, just a reminder, that was the second half, so part 2 of 2 of our Ask Tristan Anything. So the first half, and there was about 20 minutes. I think you've just listened to about 13 or 14 minutes, but there was about 20 minutes on the front end of that. Last week in episode 12, if you haven't caught that, you might be interested to go back and listen. Next up, Nettie Given Sunday. He's been around the pod for many years, shared a lot of great content, a lot of great tips. Now this season, Nettie has gone 246 and 195 on all his NFL tips, which is bang on 56%, happens to be the same clip of success that we've had with the pod best bets, and he's given out four times as many plays. So that's no joke. That's a great workload and a great winning percentage. Let's get to know the man behind those tips and the man underneath the palm tree, or the turbo top knot, as I call it. Here's Nettie. Like most Aussie blokes who love the NFL, it's usually their second sport, whereas with you, it's like by far and away like your number one sport, daylight second. So can you explain what actually got you into NFL in the first place?
It sort of happened, I guess, accidentally, as like most sort of kids do. I remember it was for my birthday. I went down to Harvey Norman to get just video games. That's what I was just getting. I went in there and found, I think it was like ARL 95 or 96. And next to it was Madden, and like I sort of knew what gridiron was, but I was pretty young at that stage, so I just thought, yeah, stuff it, I'll get this. And it was like, it was a sort of weird sort of Madden, because it came with like two discs, and one was obviously the game, and the other one was just, it was called Madden School, and he just talked about all the teams individually, and I just fucking loved it. And then obviously at that stage, it was like pretty hard to get it on TV, so I think I saw it in like the old TV guides on the SBS and all that sort of stuff. So we had to usually, yeah, tape it on the VHS and then watch it just ridiculous hours. And then it sort of just continued on from there, man. Like it just sort of built, and like I still love rugby league at that stage, but I just found as I got older and older, like I drifted more away from league. And then, you know, you sort of pick a team and stand by them. And then just since then, it's just been nothing but, like, it's honestly the only sport I watch. As soon as NFL finishes, it's just nothing. Like
you're tracking the draft and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like it never really ends.
It is a sport that's got a lot of intricacies. So how much has playing Madden over the years actually helped you like learn about the game?
It has a lot, really. And it's sort of, you sort of learn the mismatches, as simple it is from the game. Like I know I'll play a couple of the boys now, whatever, Jonesy especially, and if he'll call a defense that sort of favors, you know, a heavier sort of box, so bigger guys, less wide receivers. If he picks his defense before I pick my offense, I just completely change what I'm going to pick. I just load it and spread it out wide, and he's just like, why is this happening? It's like just what mismatches are. And then when you go to watch it in real time, and it's sort of harder because they won't necessarily say the formation, but you'll notice the players and you'll pick it out. And the good teams do the same thing. I think the Rams and Packers are doing it just the other day. Like they change their, I think the Rams got the Packers in a lighter box, and then all of a sudden the Rams just went quick formation. They were just going quick, 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 and just kept running it because they knew they had the matchup that they wanted.
I would say a lot of us in the group and a lot of people who share tips, and myself and Alex included, we've grown to love a lot of sports, especially the American sports, because we wanted to use our knowledge of punting to apply it to the NFL. But you're the exact opposite. You're trying to use your knowledge of NFL to apply it to punting. And that's not exactly the same thing. If it was, every ex-coach, ex-player, every current college coach, high school coach could be a professional bettor and make money. But do you remember that transition of trying to like start betting and using your knowledge to make money betting on the NFL?
I remember when I first started doing it. Like I think you guys sort of coached me up a lot. And one of the things that I can still say I'm not overly good at is spotting a lot of the value in the numbers and all that sort of stuff. It's just never something that's really popped to me. And then so I sort of stopped trying to lean into that and sort of force it on myself, and then going to the things that were more natural. Like every year I would watch every single game, and it just chews up just so much of your life, basically. But you do pick up on the little things, and sure enough, you can read the box score sometimes, but it just doesn't give you the right feel. And you'll see a team has just been unlucky. They'll go down and something happens, or bad call or something like that. And that sort of sticks my brain a little bit more than all of a sudden a number jumping out.
Yeah, I think that's a massive part of it. That, like, understanding how sensitive a game or result can be, like, hinge on one moment. Because there are obviously, like, there's obvious ones, like Lamar throwing a pick, 101-yard pick six. We all understand how that swings a game. But even, like, just a pass getting deflected on a third down, and it's a bit different, you know, drive-killing third down, that can totally change a game. And if you understand the sport, you're going to pick up on that a lot more. You talked about watching every minute of every game. Can you just tell us about your weekly process, because you've shared hundreds of tips this NFL season, and you said you were busy. So talk about balancing full-time work, watching the games. I know you got Game Pass.
Watching the games, like when they are live on Monday, I'm not just a one TV guy. I'll have a TV, I'll have a computer, and I have as many different games as I can going at the moment. As you've seen, I always have the notepad down taking notes as well. And then as the week goes on, I just continue to do that, like gut information. I'll use a lot of like strength of schedule and DVOA, which I got a paid subscription to Football Outsiders to get all those stats. And then, yeah, like I said, watching the games, listening to podcasts, just getting as much information as I can. And it's even beneficial, I've found, to listen to like the mainstream media ones to know what is getting fed out into the public and whatnot. And then I'll listen to a lot of the X's and O's guys and things like that. And this year is something like I've sort of tried a lot more of the player props. And in doing that, you listen to a lot of the fantasy podcasts, and even just checking a lot of the fantasy statistics and stuff like that is actually really good to harness some information. Like I spoke about the other week, like the Buffalo Bills, and they'll obviously be very important this week in the conference championship, is how weak they are against tight ends. And you go on that, I think it's just fantasy pros, and you see that they are the worst team against tight ends up at the top there. So it's just information gathering, and then it just sort of goes all in here. And then usually around that Friday, Saturday, I'll start putting together the pod, and that usually takes, I don't know, I might start on a Sunday morning, put it together for a couple of hours, and then as soon as it's aired around that 3, 3.30, it's just a decompress. Like I'll feel confident in everything that I have. I'm like, I'm not losing a single bet this week. This is brilliant. And then I have a horrible night's sleep because it's just anxiety goes nuts, and then you're up at 3 in the morning, and it's usually it'll be 3 in the morning. I'll start getting out a couple of the early bets for the games. I'll watch all the games, and then if I'm on night shift, I just roll straight into work. So I'm awake for probably about 21 hours on the Monday and just a complete mess, but it's worth it. I'll try and find both angles of a bet that I sort of like. Like if I like something, I try and find reasons why it's no good, and then I try and find reasons why it is good and sort of weigh them up a lot. And like I said, gathering a lot of the information, if I see something that sort of weighs in that favor, I'll usually try and fire quick. Like I know we got a lot of advantage earlier on in the season, like with totals, with a new with COVID, we just fired quick and we got ahead of the line in that. So.
And that's another part of like punting knowledge that I'm sure you've learned over the years is like, it's not just about getting it right, it's about timing it as well and watching the markets move and getting the best of the number, because a lot of these games, surprisingly, or a lot of these bets, they do land really close to the number. And sometimes, you know, as well as anyone, like getting that key point, point and a half, whatever, or yard or two, can be the difference between winning or losing. Now, you also talked about your Netty Given Sunday. So that is something that a lot of the people who do follow the pod do know about and appreciate. But it goes back a few years when we asked you to contribute to help us and the followers learn more about NFL. And yeah, as I say, it's more than just your picks. It's your own unique like notes and breakdowns, and it's in an entertaining style. And I wanted to include a bit of that flavor in our chat today. So let's talk to me about the wide receiver position and how they have such a big impact on games.
Look at the teams that are in the final four. Like you look at the Bucks, they've got Mike Evans, who's completely underrated. Then you got over the Bills, Stephon Diggs, and then you got Devonta Adams at Green Bay. And the Chiefs, don't get me started on the Chiefs. Every one of these teams has a stud wide receiver. So you obviously need them. And this year we've seen Green Bay, but they look a lot more dangerous because Devonta Adams is healthy. And with the way that the league is going, like it used to be the old saying, defense wins championships, but it's not. It's not anymore. It's like an offensive league. Everything's catered toward the offense, and it's all about explosive power now. And that's why the last four teams left are some of the most explosive in the league. So I think you definitely need those weapons more than anything.
It's a fascinating position because we've seen different players have success. Like you got the physical specimens. Like you look at Megatron, like Julio Jones more recently, where these guys are tall, fast, strong, agile, like can leap out of the gym. But then it's like, but you have other guys like Wes Welker, you know, is Hunter Renfro, Keenan Allen is not strikingly athletic. Cole Beasley plays for the Bills. He'll be playing for them this weekend. Or just those guys that were like the high school or college QBs. And that's where you realize the nuance of route running, obviously great hands, game understanding is just as important as being a kind of a world-class athlete.
I'd still say for me, Tyreek Hill, like he's a freak. Like he is that quick. If he wanted to be an Olympic sprinter.
Tyreek Hill in college ran a 200 meter time that would have been fifth at the London Olympics that same year. So this, we're talking about someone who is one of the, like not exaggerating, one of the fastest people on the planet when you consider he's specified his training to play football, not sprinting. And you're right, the thing is his stats might not quite compare. You've got Diggs most catches this year. You've got Devonta Adams most receiving touchdowns. But I like the way that you kind of highlighted it's his effect on the whole defense. It's like the gravity and it's the way that they have to account for him. And I obviously, like, you'd know better than I, but like players having to play off him and stuff, it's just opens up the whole field for others. And then you got Travis Kelce, and you talked about the matchup advantage for tight ends against the Bills this weekend. Well, Travis Kelce basically is a wide receiver playing tight end as well with his ability. And he's another guy that can completely dominate games.
Well, the Chiefs just spread out with so much stuff. And I don't know whether or not people would have saw it. So yesterday they kept highlighting, I think Romo was talking about how Tyreek Hill would sit in the slot and he'd just run across. So it's basically straight across the screen like that. And that would force the safety to have to come down to cut it off. But as soon as he would come down, the other people on the outside, whether it be Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, Sammy Watkins when he's healthy, that's another fast guy. And that's leaving that thing one-on-one on that outside. And there's just, like I said, the stress. As soon as Tyreek moves, they have to go, shit, where's he going? What's happening? And like, you can't tell me some of the other cornerbacks who's on the, might be on the opposite side of the field. As soon as they see him start coming across, the arsehole start to pucker in that little bit.
You know, the other play that he'll always be remembered for is that Wasp play in the Super Bowl last year. Yeah. That changes it because it's like 3rd and 15 and the Chiefs are down 10. I think there's under 10 minutes to go. And if they don't have that 40-yard completion, or was it 40-plus yards to Hill, they probably don't win that Super Bowl. And have you seen that NFL Films clip about it where Mahomes is on the sideline and he's asking the OC, have we got enough time to run Wasp? Have you seen that one?
So he was sitting on it that whole time. He just wanted to run it.
Yeah, I saw that and I'm like going, what do you mean, have we got enough time? It's like a kid who's asking, have we got enough time to do this? Have we got enough time? But what he meant was, have we got enough time for that route to develop the pass rush based on how quickly San Francisco, that had an elite front four, was getting to him? And I think they knew that Pat Mahomes had to have at least 3 seconds or that play wouldn't work. And they weren't sure if they could use that against San Fran, but they got a bit desperate. And if you watch that play, soon as that Pat Mahomes snaps the ball, he is backpedaling and he's just going backwards to just buy those extra fractions of a second combined with Tyreek Hill's speed. When he gets out into the open, and then Pat Mahomes, that makes that throw even more amazing because he throws it fading away because he had to because the pass rush is getting there.
And it hangs in the air a fair while, that ball, from memory. Like, I think Hill went in and back and sort of had to pull up for it a little bit as well.
Yeah, he actually came back towards it, which just shows how quick he got there in time. But that perfectly highlights how, that's whether you win or lose based on these guys. I can't let you go without your, I guess, Super Bowl prediction, who gets there and who takes it out.
Well, it's not the Rams anymore. I don't know. I've sort of got a
tight-up. That
wasn't
the worst pick, and it was before the quarterback broke his thumb, to be fair.
I've got futures tied up on both the Bills and the Chiefs, but to be honest, any three of the four, I don't want to see the Bucs win as a Carolina Panthers fan. I'd love to see Rodgers get another one. I'd love to see the Bills probably more than anything get in, because I think it's just been such a long drought. They've never won one. I think they had that stretch in however long ago where they went to 3 in a row or something and didn't win a Super
Bowl. Possibly, I think, 4 in a row and 4 losses. Yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills had their day and could upset the Chiefs. Like, the thing I love about Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Bills, is that he sort of did what the Patriots do on the weekend. So the Patriots were notorious for, if they played a really good run defense, why run? We'd just pass. And that's what they did against the Ravens. And I love that he thinks like that. And he's full, calm, collected. He's an awesome play caller. And I think the Bills on their day could shock them. And I think they've got the better defense and whatnot. But I think the coolest head in the playoffs is probably even Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's loving football at the moment. You see he's mucking around, he's laughing, he's having a good time. So I'd be scared of the Packers too. But as long as the Bucs don't win.
So you're going to share plenty more breakdowns and plenty more tips. And appreciate all the work and all the content you've been providing for this season, mate. I know a lot of people do. And thanks for your time today on the Wide World of Punting.
No worries. Cheers, guys. Love yous.
Cheers to Nettie for that chat. And sticking with NFL, next is my chat with Matt O'Keefe. And he hasn't been around in the group for as long as Nettie. He's popped up more just in recent months, but he's been delivering a lot of quality tips. I think he's 30 and 35, which is 54% on his sides. And I respect anybody who's even above break even on their tips, because that's not easy to do. But he's had a 26-1 banger, which was perfectly explained and played out exactly as he predicted. And he's actually shared a couple other long shots. He gave out a 15-1 that ultimately didn't win, but made the bookies shit themselves, pull the markets, and was in a great position to win. Just got unlucky in a fourth quarter of a game with a passing yards prop on Carson Wentz when it was very likely he'd be benched for Hurts. As it turned out, that happened the very next week. So Matt shares a bit of a detail into his process behind finding value betting on NFL player props. First question, I'm just interested in like your punting background, kind of when you got started punting, which sports you've punted on, and what you've when you started to realize you could find an edge.
I was a bad punter for a long, long time, like most of us. I got into poker, and that's when I started to find I could be profitable in something. I've always been good on the player props. The NRL used to have them. You can bet on the amount of tackles and hit-ups that a player could make. But due to some players not behaving so well, they took that option away from us.
Yeah, I've noticed you've been sharing heaps of NFL props, so I'm interested in like your process. But people, you're probably most well-known, I'd say, for the banger on Deshaun Watson, passing out title in the NFL, which you got at 26-1 in week 15 with a couple of weeks ago in the season, basically because you identified something that wasn't priced into the market. Can you tell us about how you uncovered that one?
I'll be honest on that one. Pre-season, I had a big bet on Mahomes to be the leader. So every week I was kind of watching. I had a big interest in who was going to win that. And I was trying to find out who can...
And what would Mahomes have been before the season? Was he like $6 or $7 range?
I got him at $5.50.
Yep.
And the logic was obvious with that one. I thought he'd be in it all the way to the end. So, with a few weeks to go, he had a bit of a lead, and but they kept putting out markets at the end of every round. So I was kind of looking for a hedge opportunity. And then with 2 weeks to go, I realised, hang on, if the Chiefs beat the Falcons in week 16, he's really unlikely to play. And the lead was only 300 to Deshaun Watson. So I'm thinking it might be like a 50-50 chance he gets it come week 17, and I'm getting 26-1. It was a perfect situation where the Texans were playing just the worst secondary in the world in the Titans in a game they were expected to be behind, which means they weren't going to run at all. And that's exactly how it played out. I think he needed 280 yards in that last game, and he went for about 360. That was never a sweat.
That's what you love to see. And you talk about the matchups there. Is that something that goes into your prop selection? You do provide a nice write-up, but I still think like there's so many props. So do you have an angle that you like try and come at it? Because also there's so many games.
I think the matchups is the most important part. And to give an example, if you're looking at a running back over his rush yards, it might be posted at about 50. You could look back and see he's only got, 35, 40 yards in his last four games. But if he was playing the Bucks or someone with a really good rush team, games that they were getting boat race the entire game, what are they going to be running for a half? So then you could have a 50 line against someone like the Jaguars, and he's going to be running for an additional 6, 7, 8 carries. That becomes an extremely attractive bet.
And then would the opposite be true as well, that wide receivers, you tend to like them in a match where the team's going to basically be behind, or same with quarterback yards?
Absolutely, yeah. It's always game-dependent, our game flow. Whenever a game's within about one score, the offenses are just going to do their usual MO, whatever that is. But when they get ahead by a couple of touchdowns or behind by a couple, they change. I mean, teams leading by a lot are going to run the ball a lot more. Obviously, we all know that to be true. And the reverse is true. When you're behind by a lot, you're just going to pass it out. So I only want generally receiving and passing yards over when I think that team's actually going to be trailing. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, in that they just see a big name like, oh, Rodgers is playing, let's just take his over. But you're getting taxed for that bet for starters. And how much is he going to be throwing in the fourth quarter up by 20?
Exactly. I think what people try and figure out, like, will this player have a great game or not? And certainly that can be an edge if you identify a team that is weak defending a certain position, and perhaps you do that as well. But I tend to think the number one thing is opportunity. So it's volume. If a running back's going to get a lot of carries, I want to bet him over if I foresee that. And the opposite, as you said, now that we've got the conference title game set, are you angling towards anything in those games?
There's a prop I really like, and it's one they really can't make the number high enough for me, and that's the Bills. I mean, they should never run the ball in this game. They just shouldn't run it. Whatever they post on Stephon Diggs, I'm into the over. I don't care what the number is.
Andy, would you play, because that's the other interesting part. So if you're basically your handicap is that Diggs is going to see a huge volume in this game, there's multiple ways to play him. Do you play him receptions over? Do you play him yards over? Do you look for anytime touchdown? Do you have like a theory on that?
I think all three are good options in that game in particular. I tend to like total yards for Diggs because he can just bust out a 50, 60-yard carry at any point. The Packers-Bucks game, I think that's going to be a really high-scoring game as well. I think the way to attack the Bucks is by the pass, but we saw last game that Drew Brees just could not throw the ball anymore. That's ultimately why they couldn't beat them. I mean, he just had no velocity whatsoever, but guess who isn't Drew Brees? Aaron Rodgers. I think he can go for a ton of yards and put someone like Devonnie Adams or Lazard. He can put them in for a lot of yards and a couple of touchdowns probably.
Have you got any more advice?
So I'm always on to the early lines as soon as I can, because you can get a huge difference in the before and after numbers. So just like a line betting anything else, that's true as well. Yeah, like Michael Thomas on the weekend, I posted him at 76. He jumped at 91. He, of course, went for zero and it didn't matter. But long term, you're going to win money by making bets like that.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually, as well as your overall profitability, that is a way to gauge whether you're being successful if you're beating the closing number, because in general, you know, that those numbers are going to tighten up closer to kickoff. Well, thanks very much. Thanks for all your great insights and tips that you've shared. I love the fact that you share it with your reasoning so people can, you know, see the tip, hear the logic. If they like it, they can jump on, and you're doing the work. Yeah. You're finding the best, what you believe is the kind of the best available number for that prop. So good luck. Thanks for that so far this season. Good luck for the remaining three big games we've got left in the season. And thanks for being on Wild World of Punting.
Thank you, Jacob.
That was Matt O'Keefe. And since speaking to him yesterday, he has posted in the group a couple of early plays for the championship games, a couple of props he really likes. And why? Now, there's a UFC card on this weekend from Abu Dhabi, UFC 257. Reached out for a cameo tip just to give you guys a little bit more tips and different perspectives of people who've had great success punting on the combat sports over the last couple of years. So have a listen to Kobe. This is his best bet of the day.
How's it going, Wild World of Punting? Kobe here from the Tripod page, and I have a best bet for UFC 257, McGregor versus Poirier. So the bet is Matt Frivola versus Ottman Azaitar. I have Azaitar to win by knockout, which is going for around $2.40, $2.50 on the American bookies. So I assume it'll translate to around the same for the Australian bookies. Basically, Azaitar hits like a truck. He's 13-0, 10 knockouts, 10 first round finishes, 7 finishes within the first 2 minutes of the fight. And Matt Frivola is notoriously weak defensively. He let Lando Venata pierce his guard with a jab. Luis Pena, who's mostly known as a kicker, was piercing his guard with strikes as well. And if Azaitar hits him clean just once, he won't be rocked. He'll be going to sleep. So that's my best bet for UFC 257, lads. Have a good day watching the fights, and cheers.
Time for the Wide World Bet of the Week. And just switch off now if you're sick of these. I'm definitely sick of losing. 6 losses in a row. I think you'll find the ROI is right bang on 100% now. So I think 11 of these we've given out. And if you've bet every one, you've returned 11 units. So that's obviously not impressive, not where we want to be. And that's what our losing streak is going to do to us. And it's different ways to evaluate your tips. I don't want to defend the tip each week. I give the reasoning up front. So that is my defense of the tip. I always believe if I'm giving out a side that I'm giving you guys a great value price. In the case of the most recent one losing with Australia, who did lead at the first innings but did not win a crazy test match that concluded yesterday. Look, I stand by the fact that if you liked Australia, that was a great value price to be on Australia. But if you didn't agree with the premise that Australia should be too strong and should put up a good performance, then you probably wouldn't jump on that one. And congratulations to anybody who picked India, certainly. I mean, they were double-digit odds throughout pretty much the whole test. I saw them in the 20-1 range. They came through, and even up till yesterday afternoon, not many were predicting that they could win. They did, and that was pretty impressive. It sunk our Wide World Bet of the Week. We go again this week. And this week, going back to NFL, as I've alluded to in this pod already, a couple of huge games. And we're going to take one game against the other. We're going to go AFC title game to be higher scoring than the NFC title game. So that is the Bills and Chiefs match total points to be higher than the total points in the Bucks-Packers. So let's look at the AFC matchup first and why, and what, and look at how they both won last week. And this is where I think I'm finding a little bit of value, because we look at the Bills against the Ravens. And it was a very low scoring win by the Bills, but the game was played in close to a blizzard, like such windy conditions, so hard for quarterbacks to stick their passes. We had Lamar Jackson injured in the second half of that game. We had field goals off the posts. I think that that game was misleading in terms of how low scoring it was, because the Bills are a really good offense and very aggressive. And the Chiefs match also had a very high profile quarterback be injured. It was Mahomes himself. Henny comes out, the backup in that game, and it makes one pass in the end of that drive that Mahomes went out when they're at midfield that gets him to a field goal. That's the only points the Chiefs scored from that point onwards. the Browns, there was missed field goals in that game. There was a certain touchdown that was fumbled just through the end zone. That turns a 7-point play into 0 points. So again, it was misleadingly low scoring. I think when these two teams hook up, I'm very confident Pat Mahomes is going to be good to go, because I didn't think the hit he took last weekend was too bad. I would suggest with this bet, because it's fixed odds, wait until a little later in the week where you can be more highly confident that Pat Mahomes is going to play. That's the only way I could see this game trending much lower to an under. But you'll hear that while the Chiefs will want to keep it quiet, you'll hear certainly if the backup is getting a lot of the snaps in practice. Where, and we know with the Bills, they're not even going to attempt to run the ball. They're going to come out and throw every down if they can. And if they're behind, even more so. Now let's turn our attention to the NFC. We saw two very high-scoring victories with the Packers and the Bucks progressing. But with the Packers' case, not only were they clicking, the Rams' best defensive player, Aaron Donald, was on a limited snap count, clearly hampered, and the Rams had to play super aggressive and play from behind, and it led to a slightly higher-scoring game. We still saw the Packers want to run the ball 30-plus times, and that's what we also saw with the Bucks, who beat the Saints, and while the Saints' offense was really inept, the truth of the matter is, I know everyone said that serves you right for betting against Brady, because that was my only loss in the NFL multi. Brady wasn't that great. The Bucs put on 30 points because they got benefited from four turnovers, a couple that got them straight into the red zone, and they scored 21 points off three straight Saints turnovers. What I did see out of the Bucs is they want to run the ball. They were force-feeding Leonard Fournette. Ronald Jones has got a bit of an injury, but they were still giving him carries too, and they also ran the ball more than 30 times. So I've got one match where I think there's going to be a ton of passing. We know passing equals bigger yardage plays or stopped clock. We've got another game. I think both teams will want to stick to the run as much as they can and dominate field time of possession. And we know running plays, we get shorter yardage gains, we get longer drives, and we get a clock running. That's why that would trend to a lower score and the other game would trend to a higher score. If you need any more convincing, the total for Chiefs-Bills is set about 53. The total for Bucks-Packers is set at 51. But we're getting $2.25. The match with the slightly higher total is higher scoring. So that's where I believe we're definitely getting value. And I think we're getting that little bit more value because of the uncertainty out of Pat Mahomes. But I'm saying you can mitigate that by waiting and not betting this till Saturday or Sunday when you're highly confident Mahomes is going to play. And I'm highly confident already, but there's no rush to jump on this. Then we get a play that definitely has better than 50-50 chance in my eyes, paying over $2. Simple as that. That's all I can do each week is give a play that I think gives us a good shot and gives us something fun to cheer for. The higher scoring game will be the game we want to be higher scoring will be the second of the two that both take place on Monday in Australia. So we'll be cheering for a tighter, low scoring encounter in the early morning Monday, and then just a shootout in the second game. If we get that, we'll break our 6-week duck on the Wide World Bet of the Week. Thanks for tuning in, though. I appreciate you guys' support, regardless of the fact that the bets have not delivered the money. I hope you're getting a lot out of the pod and enjoying it. We've got just 3 episodes to go, so I'm going to try and finish strong in terms of these bets getting up and also bringing content that you guys really enjoy. NFL, my breakdown will be this Saturday as well, about 10-15 minutes, looking deeper at the games and any best bets I've got. Went 2-1 last week, and as I said, agonizing a 1-leg loss on a 5-leg multi, but we'll get after it again each week as we always do. Thanks for tuning in. Always gamble responsibly. Legal.